It is about that time again. Thank you very much for tuning in to listen to This Week in Mormons.
Been a long time. Shouldn't have left you without a dope
step to. Al, I'm going to make you start the show someday. So that way when you're...
Then who would sing Death
that way? That
Destiny's
way when you're
Child
talking and letting it, I can just chime in with just random, you know, I'll
Jeff, don't. This is the creativity I bring to the show.
I'm just saying, I want to be like you sometimes. I want to know what it's like to be in your
I
shoes, saboteur.
Like you.
I want to know.
My only role is to try and distract you.
Yeah, exactly. As I try to put out a professional production that I can be proud of and share.
Not me.
Share with
Not
my
me.
Children.
This is for posterity.
It is. Think about this. We have 50 some odd shows, and this is our 58th.
Jeff,
this is our 58th show. We have so much to show the world.
I would love to have my child start perusing the titles of our shows someday, and he's like, Dad, what is insert post? What's the road trip to the end of the world? What's an anti-porn symphony?
The anti-porn symphony
like, well,
was
son,
a beautiful moment for Salt Lake City. How often do you get to have
what is hot sauce in the mouth and a cold shower? What are these names you give these? It, these are awesome.
We love to be cryptic. Other Mormon podcasts just get
we're an enigma. We're an enigma wrapped in a cipher, smothered in secrets.
We are just creative like that because other Mormon podcasts are very serious, and so their titling is to the point. I mean, the episode will just be called "How to Deal with Adversity." And they talk about it. We, on the other hand, like to use cryptic titles, hoping that you, dear listener, will wonder where it came from in the show. And then it's like
Jimmergasm.
It's like a prize when the show is over. You learn where the title.
You're like, what was it? What was
you learn
it?
Where
when
the title
we mention
came
it, it's like Pee Wee Herman's word of the day. All of a sudden we mention it's like woo woo woo.
And Cherry starts going crazy.
To feel a man's hand on me. Boop, 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 boop.
Mecca lecca hi, mecca hiney ho. That was such a great show. Pee Wee's Playhouse.
My favorite show that we've had was the intervention episode. I was so bummed. Like, we got so few responses.
I think...
Nobody cared, probably because we were just like... on a trip at 3 a.m. recording the show, but I thought it was some of my best material.
I think it was that. I also think it got... We also posted that show midweek, and then I wrote my article.
Oh, the op-ed.
So I think the op-ed, which was timely, it wouldn't have made sense to delay it. I think that might have buried it a little bit, and in that sense, I'm sorry, because people, you need to listen to episode number 56. I'm just
Jeff. You and I have certain gems that have shown up throughout our friendship together.
Okay.
Things such as a boat on which to sail, interpretive tree dance, or there's a great video floating out there of Jeff playing. I think we should embed this one of Jeff playing the organ while I do my Baptist preaching.
I was actually thinking about that one the other day.
Well, there are ones that like I go back to every now and then, and I'll watch and I just laugh. Like they make me so happy,
they're
so genuinely happy. And I feel like the intervention show is one of those. Like I've listened to it a few times, not as a pat on my back, but like I genuinely enjoyed that banter. I thought it was great.
Yeah, we had a fun time, and I agree. Did we post the tree dance once? Didn't we do that?
No, I hope not.
The tree dance is hilarious.
I hope not, because the tree dance requires a little bit of context, and I don't feel like this show is long enough to give that adequate context.
No, the tree dance, to sum it up, though, was the result of a night. We decided it must be what it's like to be drunk, basically.
Well, so
we were
over in Ukraine visiting some members over there, and
yep.
and we decided, like, Jeff is he's kind of the guitar guy at the party. He was more so the guitar guy at the party. A few years ago, he's gotten a little bit better now. And so he would, like, travel around with his guitar and be like, oh, hello, ladies. Well, I happen to have my guitar.
That has never
right
happened.
Here.
And that is not what happened in Ukraine. In Ukraine, a guitar was forced upon me.
Was it?
I had to play it as payment.
Oh, that's right.
Remember?
So anyway, Jeff, we're sitting there playing songs and, like... as we get into making up our own songs, which inevitably Jeff and myself are prone to do,
Red Love Wine. Yeah, the four of us, two of our other friends, yeah, we wrote, we basically started improvising songs for every single person in our group that was in Ukraine.
Which was great. So we had the Owl song, the Jeff song, having these great Ukrainians singing along with us was great. Well, and then we got to, they asked, somebody was asking about this girl that I was kind of dating at the time. And I explained that she was modern dance, right? She was in modern dance. And they're like, well, and so I'm trying to translate this. And they're like, is that like this kind of dance? And I was like, no, well, it's hard to explain. Here, let me show you. And so I grab my buddy Lauren and we go and set up. I'm like, Jeff, play us a ditty. And so he just starts going. And it was this magical moment of tree dancing.
And we recorded it and it was perfect.
It's beautiful.
The best part is the boat on which to sail. Like you watch the thing and it's funny. And then when we completely switch gears and we build the boat with which to sail.
Because it was this moment. This brain vibes. It was great. It was great. Yeah. Actually, maybe we should post it now.
Well, now I think like we have to. We've teased people enough with it that I think it just has to be.
We'll give it to them. Don't watch it until you listen to this. And if you've watched it already, watch it again after this.
Share
it.
It's the best. Turn us into an internet meme. We'd love it.
Come, we are lumber. Let us make a boat on which to sail.
I'll be the blade.
Oh, it's great times. Great times.
Oh, it was great times. Yeah, we've had some fun. The preacher one you did was good, too. I wish we had video of another version of that when you were actually touching foreheads and making our friend Ben pass out.
Oh, that was all in good fun.
And we're doing it. And we were filming that one when we were at the School of International Relations at Taras Shevchenko University.
Taras.
Sorry. So we're sitting there in like a lecture hall at a prestigious university in Ukraine. And while we're biding our time, we're just messing around doing Baptist preacher stuff and falling on the floor as if we have been touched by the power.
I don't know if that's sacrilegious we probably shouldn't make fun of others. But
we're not making fun, but you know how sometimes televangelism is entertaining at times.
It's true. If we can poke fun at Glenn Beck, we can poke fun at Kenneth Copeland.
I'm just saying, if they can make fun of us, which the world does,
hey, we can't. We're just having a good time.
We can't in good
anyway,
spirits.
Anyway, I'm sure people are enthralled at our
Christians.
Our weekly walk down memory lane. But
I know, right? That's the beauty of TWIM is that everyone has to put up with the two of us just reminiscing over our friendship with stuff that has nothing to do with anything relevant to whatever's going on now, but. You know, it's these moments that keep us going, people, because TWIM isn't cheap.
No, no. This comes out of pocket. Out of my memory pocket.
It does. So things like this help us continue on in our quest to bring you the greatest, most riveting news and commentary the world has ever seen. Why am I addicted to speaking like I'm so pretentious like this? I don't understand why.
You're like a British detective. Well, that's preposterous.
That doesn't sound like me at all.
If I ever get my hands. So, all right, big news this week. I was sitting up. When was this? Two nights ago? Three nights ago? It was about 3 or 4 a.m. here. And I'm just kind of working away, kind of winding up my day. And like news
this is Friday morning,
tweets start coming across on Twitter about the earthquake that happened in Japan. And it was remarkable to watch all this unfold. It was really I don't know when you heard about it. I'm sure probably the next morning, Jeff, but like as these tweets, it was crazy because the only place I could get live footage of it online was through Al Jazeera TV, and so I was watching it from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. like just I was just watching it, and they're broadcasting these like helicopter footage and stuff of these waves just like cruising towards Japan. And trying to like give some sort of a sense of the aftermath, but it was I'd never had the experience of outside of like maybe the World Trade Center bombings. I've never had the experience of watching news unfold from the very beginning, right?
Yeah,
so it was really kind of a fascinating experience to be completely crass about it, I guess, to watch all this happen, but. Gosh, just an unreal disaster, like just absurd how much damage was done and what's gone on over there. I don't know. When did you hear about it?
It was Friday morning. I got tweets about it. I checked my phone right when I woke up, and I was like, oh, fun. And so the tsunami had gone down, but BBC was doing great live coverage at the time. And it was just harrowing. The amazing thing is remember the tsunami that hit in 04, that hit Southeast Asia?
Yeah.
And the difference in that is there was not a lot of footage of it. And, of course, it was a little more rural, and they weren't as prepared. Japan, of course, has more contingencies, at least for earthquakes and stuff along those lines. We're still seeing very grave situations, obviously, not to make light of it. But just to see that footage, there's that shot from the helicopter of the tsunami actually coming in from the coast and just wiping out the towns. And it's amazing to watch. And the force behind it, because it's just like, it just keeps going. You figure it's just going to pucker out here pretty soon. It just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. And it just, the power behind
it. That
was
really scary. I've got a bunch of friends, of course, over in Hawaii and up and down through the islands out there. And, you know, all of them, thankfully, are safe and accounted for, but like it's just scary knowing people out in the ocean like that. Now, have you been following any of the nuclear stuff that's been going
on? Nuclear stuff has been pretty scary. They've had at least two explosions now. Nothing has melted down of yet, but it seems that a lot of stuff is right there on the precipice.
Well, I guess they're built on like a lead basin. Like they took precautions for this. The precautions they took were allowed these things to withstand up to an 8.1, right?
Okay.
And so, like, you just never imagined that. What did they upgrade it to now? A 9?
They upgraded it to a 9.0.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know, just bizarre. Well, so anyway, obviously there's repercussions for the Latter-day Saint community in this, outside of just the fact that this is human suffering going on.
Yeah.
But a lot to kind of consider over there. One is the humanitarian aid effort. I haven't seen the church kind of put anything together. Typically, they make a pretty decent, I don't want to say show, but like, you know that they're heading over because they'll do like a drive throughout the wards and say, we need X, Y, and Z. But I haven't seen any of that, and I haven't seen any reports of them getting over there, which kind of surprises me.
Well, I think the church is on it. They mentioned, what does it say here? They're currently discussing ways to provide assistance. I think one of the other things is, in a country as developed as Japan that is at least prepared for earthquakes, the tsunami, no, but earthquakes themselves, I mean, this is not Haiti last year, which was not prepared at all for an earthquake, and that's why the death toll is so high, because they lack the infrastructure to withstand one. So I'm saying I think the church is working on it, but at the same time, Japan is the kind of country prepared enough that it is able to handle a lot of it on its own. There'll still be plenty of work to be done, but this is not going to be as much of a disaster underdeveloped countries.
Think even like New Orleans, right? Like America's got plenty of mobility and support for it, but once the novelty of it wears off and the work's only a third of the way done, I mean, that's where the real trouble
meets,
right?
That's very true. Yeah, because I mean, like even Haiti, remember, it was huge on the news, all these telethons raising money, but you know, soon it fades out and they still need help for those sorts of things. I mean, Haiti's still a mess a year later. Please, it needs plenty of work. One of the other upsides, though, is that apparently all missionaries serving in Japan are accounted for. So that's good.
Yeah, so the newsroom, I got that text. I always get the text like 10 hours after they post it on the newsroom, which is a little bit ridiculous. But we got the text coming out saying that everybody was fine. So that's good news. Right.
Yeah, stuff's by and large, structurally, stuff's okay. Missionaries are safe.
What were you telling me? The Moroni on the temple?
Apparently, the tremor was so intense that it actually spun or twisted the Moroni on the temple, like 180 degrees.
Huh.
So
now it's facing west?
Yes, Moroni is facing China.
What's interesting about that is we know that Christ will come from the east and then wrap all the way around the world, coming then back around from the west.
Say what?
No, I don't know. I just made that up.
Yeah, the funny thing is, you know, not every temple actually has a Moroni facing east.
I know that's true, actually. There's only, like, there's Most of them do, but it's most not of them like, do.
But there,
like
there
the
are
rule.
A couple, and usually it's just for like, you know, structural, just general architectural reasons. They have them face a different direction. I think the one in Manhattan actually doesn't face east.
So they actually, I'm reading now. Somebody just sent this over to me, as luck would have it, the update on the church's response to Japan.
Okay.
So they're discussing with the government and humanitarian aid organizations how to provide assistance. This is why they haven't provided the relief aid already. All the missionaries and its members, as far as everybody can tell, is accounted for and fine. They say 95% of the Latter-day Saints in the affected area have been contacted, and initial reports indicate there are no deaths. However, there's limited information in most of the devastated areas. This is what's crazy, right? It's like there's still like villages that are missing, that got washed out, and nobody knows what happened to them.
The trains were missing. Entire trains were missing. How does that even happen?
That's so crazy, man. Could you imagine being that dispatcher and you're like, where is the number two? I have no idea.
Did you see the article, what was it, today? This guy who was found sitting on his floating house 10 miles out to sea.
No way.
Yeah. And it broke my heart to read it because it said he watched his wife get swept out to sea. So, I mean, she died. And he just hung out on like the roof of his house. He's like 10 miles out and they find... just floating in the ocean, and they found him.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't imagine.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy.
Yeah, so they're coming. I mean, we just had the earthquake down in Christchurch in New Zealand a couple of weeks ago, and now we have this. This seems to happen a lot in the early months of the year, because last year the big earthquakes we had were in Haiti and Chile, and they were also at the beginning of the year. It's kind of random.
They were also on the 11th.
Yeah?
March 11th is this one.
The
11th. January 11th was Haiti, right?
Stop it.
No, I actually saw some, like a dig article. It was like, and then December 21st, 2011, if you add all the numbers together, it equals 11.
All right, so I'll look forward to that. But we know the world is ending on May 21st, so it doesn't matter.
Right. I forgot about that. The road trip to the end of the world.
Yeah, last week's episode. Yeah.
It really is a little bit crazy. I mean, this is the seventh most intense or most powerful earthquake in the history or in the recorded history, right?
Yeah, and like, I think it's the most powerful one to ever hit Japan, right?
Gosh. Well, I don't know, man. Like, my distinct feeling was hot dang, I'm, you know, like, get your stuff in order. Because now is not a time to be
messing around,
goofing off.
Though
it's just like sobering, right? Like, it's all fun and games. We're all goofing off, having a good time. But there are like some major, major catastrophes going on. It's a little bit worrisome.
I know, and the other worrisome thing is that none of them have hit the U.S. As far, I mean, well, we had Katrina, but you know, in the past while. Not a lot's happened, and I'm really worried, being a Californian, of a serious quake's going to eventually hit California, because we haven't had a very major one in a very, very long time out there. So
yeah.
It'll be freaky. They had a couple last year that were pretty sizable, so they were to at least relieve some of the pressure, I guess, but they were out in the desert, so they didn't affect as much as, say, the Northridge quake, which was right there in the middle of L.A., and that's the one that caused the most damage, but that was back in, like, 94, so it's been a long time since we've had anything serious. So,
one of things, as things are shifting, right? Like, I'm not, I ain't no scientist. I'm but a Missouri farm boy. But as things are shifting, that changes the whole dynamic. Like, as everything was fairly settled and stable for a while, and then you move stuff. What did they say? Like 10 inches.
Yeah.
Here's what I think actually happened. You know how the magnetic North Pole is moving?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. The magnetic poles of the Earth move all over the place.
I bet this Moroni is still facing east, but to the new magnetic north.
Hello.
What you know? What you know?
And if you want to put a... if you want, as a side note, in a more jovial way, if you ever want to have a laugh at earthquakes, there was the great movie...
Jeff, sense the moment.
I'm just saying. It was called 10.5 or 10.0. A TV-made movie.
Are you thinking of 2012?
No. It was like before 2012. It was like an NBC TV event.
Jeff, I just don't think this is the time.
I'm just saying, it was atrocious. You have to see it. They solve the problem for aftershocks by detonating nuclear devices that will fuse the fault line, thus stopping plate tectonics forever.
Remember the...
That's all. I just had to share. I'm sorry.
Terrible movies have their place.
Terrible movies are like the best movies. And yeah. So I guess we should move on. But the earthquake thing is harrowing. Obviously, we're not going to sit here and pretend that, you know, come to us for all the latest updates on this and that. No, like watch the BBC, for example. You'll find good stuff. Oh, as a side note, though, did you see Obama's speech about the earthquake?
Sir. What did he say?
Weird. He gave this, you know, very typical, we're with the people of Japan and we've got your back and we'll support you and blah, blah, blah. And then just very awkwardly, he just veered off into, many Americans are aware of the difficulty and the price of gasoline today. And so, like, I feel like the speech should have just been, condolences to Japan. We are your allies, your friends. We will do whatever it takes to help you. And then he combined this awkward domestic policy speech into the rest of it. It was odd, especially for someone who, despite detractors, you know, one of his greatest strengths is in speaking. And so it was a weird move. I don't know. I was watching it live, and even the BBC pulled away once he started talking about gas prices and like global warming. And you're like, well, what is this?
Huh?
Just offer your support to the people. That's all you need to do. Oh, it's sad. So you clearly have very strong feelings about what I just said, Al.
Well, I don't know. What do you do?
It was just awkward. So that's all. Awkward. So anyway, in a non-LDS related bit of news, but one.
This is news.
But one that still has important ramifications.
Is this
for...
the sexy saxophone guy?
I wish it were. No, the Dalai Lama last week announced that he is going to give up his role as Tibet's political leader. So not its spiritual leader, which is the general role of the Dalai Lama. The current Dalai Lama has been the one to really turn it into a political movement for, you know, Tibetan freedom, or at the very least, actual autonomy from China, even though technically they are, but we'll save that for another discussion. So the Dalai Lama is going to cease to be the political leader. He feels that the Tibetans need to freely elect their political apparatus. The Dalai Lama is a stud. Of course, it's funny that this happened last week because I just watched an entire documentary about Tibet and its existence and problems with China. And of course, it was a biased documentary very much, but it was very interesting to learn about this. So I don't know if there's a lot to say, at least for our show. I mean, we could get into a lengthy discussion about Tibet and how it's not Chinese and what they should have their own right to self-determination, and how the Chinese keep importing Han Chinese to try to dilute the Tibetan population down and blah, blah, blah. But that's not super relevant to this podcast, necessarily. If anything, the only thing it has to do with is the fact that we do believe people should have the right to choose their form of government and to act and worship and believe as freely as they can. And in that sense, you can safely say that China does deny Tibet that. So,
well, Tibet... In your native tongue, I have to say, Shini, Nimaha, Mangho.
Look at you and your skills.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, Al, what alphabet does the Tibetan language use?
They use the simplified Chinese / Vietnamese / Thai.
Wrong. It's called Reformed Egyptian.
Do they really?
No. No.
I was like, man, I thought Moroni was the only guy working there.
It was the Nephites and the Tibetans.
Whole time the Dalai Lama's got this working up there.
No, Tibetan has its own alphabet. And by the way, Vietnamese is written in the Latin alphabet.
And just so you know, all that stuff I just said are just Chinese phrases from the movie Rush Hour. So,
which I have never seen. So
great movie. Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker. A brilliant duo until they got to number two.
That's a beautiful movie. Yay. Rush Hour. I never saw it. Should I see it? I wonder if it's
You should have seen it in 1999 when it was great.
I'm sorry. I just, Buddy.
Now, the pop culture references, I mean, it just doesn't work.
My apologies. Anyway, so yay for the Dalai Lama. He'll still be kicking. And
other news.
Keep him on your Tibetan stuff.
This week on The Daily Show.
This was great.
Was it? What was it, Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the Daily Show, Jon Stewart had on the makers of South Park. Who is it? Matt Stone. Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm opening this sucker up.
Open it up, baby.
Well, so we had him on there just to talk about the Book of Mormon musical, right? Which I can't decide how I feel about it, right? Like obviously I don't anticipate being painted in a very positive light by the creators of South Park, but this. A lot of the reviews that have been coming out, and this interview in particular, kind of promotes the same idea, is that it wasn't like an attempt to blaspheme the church, so to speak, rather an attempt to like just take a look at religion in general, which, you know, I'll be the first one to get in line. Like, I don't mind poking fun at myself. I think a well-placed Mormon joke is as good as any joke. Why not throw it in there every now and then? And it's, I don't mind that at all. So I don't know. Like, I'm trying to decide. I've seen a lot of flack, a lot of feedback from people. A little bit, I wouldn't say higher up in the church, but more seasoned, like old people in the church that have that are just like appalled at the idea of this. And I'm trying to decide if I want to go and see it at all. I know a couple people here in New York have gone and seen it, and didn't like they weren't. I don't know. I don't have any firsthand accounts. I just hear that they didn't mind it so much. They thought it was pretty well done. And so far as the musical goes, was entertaining. So I don't know. I think we should do an investigative outing. I'll work on getting press passes for us. And
Okay.
And we'll go check this out. I think it'd be I'm against giving them our $100 a piece for the tickets, but we may have to ante up and go and check this out just so we can give an actual review of it.
Yeah, maybe.
From a Mormon's perspective.
Yeah, and I think the almost lost my thought. Yeah, those who have seen it, though, are going to be the types. Because I think the problem is I don't mind, you know, obviously, especially based on the tenor of our podcast, I don't mind, you know, lampooning stuff in the church, kind of teasing ourselves. I don't mind that at all. I do think the main thing here is probably that it actually has questionable, offensive content in general.
Well, they say the language is rough.
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't be. A whole other side note about how Broadway shows have no rating system. How are you supposed to know? You go see something, you know.
Bam, naked woman.
Yeah, and you're like, what is this?
So anyway, we'll put the link up to the interview that they had on The Daily Show.
Yeah, well, we can probably embed it. Yeah, and I thought it was fine. Jon Stewart was like wetting himself over how much he loved it.
Yeah, what did he say? What was his comment? He was like, it may have been the best musical ever.
Yeah, he said that. He called it their, for Trey Parker and Matt Stone, their doctoral thesis, basically. Like, this is the crowning achievement of their career. And these guys have done a lot. I mean, they created South Park, and love or hate South Park, it has been an astounding success, and has become extremely culturally relevant to America. And so he says it is their crowning achievement. That of all the things they should be most proud of. Apparently they've been working on the musical for about 7 years.
I think that's ridiculous. Any musical that takes longer than a road show to put together isn't worth doing, in my opinion.
That's true.
Look at Rodgers and Hammerstein. They were 3 weeks, 4 weeks, boom, new musical.
Yeah.
Oklahoma, out of the brilliance of one man's...
Oklahoma, I'm running down the plain.
It's a song about... encouraging a man to commit suicide. Poor Judd is dead. I mean, you don't just like that. That takes brilliance, not time. Okay, people.
You can't mess with Rodgers and Hammerstein. I'm sorry. No, you no really Andrew can't. Lloyd Webber, no Cameron McIntosh, no Trey Parker and Matt Stone. You cannot touch Rodgers and Hammerstein. They gave us the King and I. They have given us so much.
Scooting right along. This is my favorite part.
What are you talking
about? Of every episode.
Is this my turn now?
Oh yeah.
Oh, because we're bringing it back, folks. You haven't heard it officially since the Jell-O named episode, whose name I'm forgetting at present. Jell-O's Reign of Terror, and here it is again. Rants. So, this is really just me I don't think Al has a rant. Al, if you come up with a rant while I'm doing
this. Yeah, I'll rant too. Go for it.
By all means, you can rant. I just have a bone to pick with LDS Tech. Now, I'm the first to say I love how far...
LDS rants.
I love how far the church has come in being tech savvy and actually almost getting ahead of the curve now in a lot of ways. And I think this is terrific. I mean, think about 5 years ago. There were no smartphones. You know, we're about to get
there.
There
were barely smart people.
Yes, there wasn't much. But streaming and things like that sort of existed, but the church was very slow. You were hard-pressed to even find old seminary DVDs or things from the distribution center actually on DVD. They were still just on VHS.
You remember trying to stream conference in the beginning, and they were like, people, don't come on here. This is for, like, foreigners. Don't watch.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. The church was very behind the curve, and I love that now we're very, very, very involved in the tech community, and that's great. That's great that we're doing those things. Anything to facilitate improving the work of the kingdom for the members. I think that's terrific. And as part of it, of course, there's tech.lds.org, which is...
Oh, I hear that's great.
Which is involved... they're involved in a number of projects. But
what
today,
do you think of tech.lds.org?
In general, I like what they do. But today, I feel that... I just have to say it. Does the church dislike Android users? Is there something
what?
Against us?
What?
Are we receiving kickbacks from Apple? Because...
Apple fanboys in the church headquarters?
I know, right? Now, I get one thing I get, though, is that those who work on these projects for LDS Tech, it's all volunteer work. They don't have, like, paid professionals doing any of this stuff. So if you get the Gospel Library app for your iPhone, it's because some programmers just up and did it for fun on their own to volunteer, which is cool. So part of the problem could just be that Android people are not stepping up.
Now, forget that.
But this is my problem. In a world that 2 or 3 years ago, I would fully expect applications to be developed for iOS or then, you know, the iPhone software and slow on things like Android or WebOS for Palm or this, that I would get it back then. But in today's world, we're in the global.
Android is the largest market share of mobile OS out there.
Why are you making fun of me? It is the largest in the world. It has
no,
over
20. Support you.
It has over 20. No, I know when you're not supporting me. I know when you're patronizing me. We've been through this. Remember the interview?
Sorry.
We know.
Yeah. Keep going.
Anyways, yes. Android has 25.5% of the worldwide market share, and iOS has 16.7, okay, for worldwide. But even in the States, it's the same thing. There are more people using Android phones than iPhones. And this is not a fanboy thing about what's better. I'm just talking about the numbers of...
No, this is a fanboy thing from the church. The church.
It might be, because I'm saying, you know, if we're talking straight numbers, then the church should be catering to the largest market, which would be, in this case now, Android phone users. And now I am tired of iPhone people getting apps that are finished beforehand or getting better apps. For example, the Gospel Library app, which long existed on iOS and they kind of played catch up with Android. The one for the iPhone, if you've ever used it, many of you listening probably have it. You're able to choose the content you want to download. You can highlight sections. You can do a lot of cool things with it. The Android one, on the other hand, comes with just... It comes with what it comes with, and you can't get more of anything until like an update comes through. I can't go on there and download certain manuals that I want.
Don't even get me started on the BlackBerry version of this,
which
app.
Is probably even worse. Yeah, I imagine
it's hideous.
But at least rightfully so, because fewer people use BlackBerry, right? So my problem with this is, why don't we get this full functionality as Android users? It was acceptable at one point in time, but it no longer is. And this especially frustrated me this week because there's another app out called LDS Tools. Which is similar to a lot of third-party ones that have been out that yank ward, you know, information and calling data from MLS from your login to the LDS.org website. I think it's great. The church is encouraging us to use our Mormon password and login more frequently to do stuff. But the same thing. The app, I'll put up screenshots actually on the website. You'll see the beautiful finished iOS version, which is beautiful. It shows all the information. If there's a picture taken of the individual in the ward, it shows up with a picture.
Oh, that's great.
It's very nice. You can seamlessly add them to your contacts, do all sorts of things. The Android one came out, and it's not quite at the same level.
Wait,
shall
how do you
we
mean?
Say? Of it lists your ward stuff. I mean, the interface is less
it
attractive
makes you
than one. But
it has made you less attractive on Android.
Okay, not just that. The point is, it lacks a few simple things. It lacks pictures, which is, I can live without, but it's nice to have, sure.
Well, but still, no, but it should be there.
It should be there, but the one thing that's not there at all is there is no option when you bring up someone's contacts to just add them to your contacts with all their data, which exists in a third-party app that I use called Stake Central, which has been very good for any of you Android users. It doesn't exist. There is no... How can they not include that functionality? How can they give
the
us...
The church's app makes you less attractive. I feel like
yes,
feel like we need to get this message out there.
I'm tired of half-baked apps for Android from the developers of the church. If it is just an issue of there not being enough Android developers and there's Apple fanboys running amok in Salt Lake, that might just be the case. I have no idea. And if I knew how to write apps, I'd gladly...
As a technical... I hire out of the tech industry pretty regularly. Sure. There is not an abundance of Apple developers in Salt Lake. There's a decent amount, but there's by no means an abundance.
Yeah. And I don't know what the data is. A great market research.
Android is so much easier to develop in, too. Like, anybody that makes a web page can make an Android app. It's very, very user-friendly. Developer-friendly.
Right. And yet, we're still stuck with this half-baked stuff. And I'm sorry, the BlackBerry versions and stuff, that's a whole other...
Well, and we have that stupid trackball thing we're still working on.
Yes. Well, unless you get the Storm, which has been such a rousing
success. I cannot wait until September when I'm out of my Sprint contract and I can leave free of charge.
Congratulations, sir. Anyways, that is my rant with LDS Tech. What have we done to deserve this? That's all I'm wondering.
We hereby call on you, LDS Tech.
You know, get it together. And all they're going to tell me is if you know people who want to volunteer their time, by all means. But come on. You're leaving us
Forget
in the lurch.
That. Yeah. No, I'm with you.
So that's all. That's all. Thanks.
As a technophobe myself, I have a very soft place in my heart for finally developed apps, particularly gospel-related apps that make consuming gospel-related materials easier and more convenient. So, church, get on this. Can we talk to Thomas? Where is Mr. Monson? Oh. I need to talk to him.
I don't know if he's very involved.
We wanted to do a quick shout out to there's a few other great Mormon podcasts out there.
Yeah, we're not the only one. I know you thought we were.
Well, honestly, so the entire reason I started this podcast with you, Jeff, the reason we started this podcast.
thank you for that
was when you did a search in iTunes. There used to be a podcast called LDS Voices, which I listened to regularly, and then they just disappeared. Like, they were just gone. There was nothing else of any sort of decent rapport in the App Store. Nothing that was like kind of like I just wanted something that I could listen to because I listen to podcasts all the time. Just let it run in the background, and I would be like up in the now on church news and that kind of stuff. There's nothing like that. So that was the catalyst to start this, was there was nothing out there. And so it's exciting to have other great podcasts, well done interviews and articles and that sort of thing going on around us. So we just wanted to give a little shout out to our buddies over at Mormon Stories.
Yes.
Do you know them, Jeff?
Not well necessarily. The guy behind Mormon Stories is I forget his name, John something.
Dellen.
John Dellen, yeah, and he's actually been at the forefront of Mormon podcasting for years and years and years and years and years. And so he's
years?
A very with it.
He hasn't been
years and
that
years
long.
And years, just no. years, so many years.
Like 3 years, maybe.
Actually, I believe he started Mormon Stories back in 2005, so it's been around for a while before podcasting was even really a thing. So. Good for him. So, if anything, I mean, I don't even feel like we have business giving a shout out because Mormon Stories is a long established.
No. I shout podcast. When I shout.
All right, fair enough. Shout. I'm talking to you. So Mormon Stories, we wanted to shout out, especially for last week's show or this week's show, however you want to look at it.
Yeah. So this week's
it
show
was heady.
On. What is the heading?
It was heady. Pornography. Masturbation, sex, and marriage in Mormonism. So, you know, this
well,
some serious subject matter.
So I had never listened to one of these, and Jeff sent over the website and was like, these guys are great. Have you heard of them? And so my very first introduction to them is pornography, masturbation, sex, and marriage in Mormonism.
Yeah, I thought about that after I sent the link, actually.
And I was like, okay. Does this go along with the intervention episode? Was I supposed to get something out of this? Well, so it's kind of an interesting. Well, I gave it a listen.
Sorry,
I gave it a listen. I'm not exactly sure how I feel about this week's episode in particular, but like I like in general some of their past ones quite a bit. This week was interesting. They had a non-LDS person on there to discuss some of the ramifications or the context of pornography, masturbation, healthy sex, that kind of thing in general. And they kind of came off a little bit flippant, I think, in the treatment of the subject matter. I think it's one of the reasons why, Jeff, you and I have talked about this before, why we're a little bit hesitant to kind of bring a similar topic up on TWIM. Is just because it's like my comment was I'm not 100% sure what the spirit of the law is in all of this, right? Like there's a lot of circumstances that we have doctrine or like, you know, we know that masturbation is against the law of chastity, right? Like, but it's against it to a degree. It doesn't necessarily like it's dealt with differently than say
adultery or
right,
something like that.
Infidelity,
sure,
right?
Sure.
And so like I don't know where the line is, and I don't want to like there's something to be said for feeling, you know, feeling that guilt that leads to, you know, like a godly sorrow, right? That leads you to
absolutely.
Repentance and correction. But there's also something to be said for not ripping yourself to pieces over something that isn't the be all end all, in the world of heady sins. And so like, I'm not confident in where to address the subject. And so it was interesting to read the comments that came after they addressed it, because they addressed it and it was kind of the, like the general feeling was, you know what, it's pretty darn normal to, you know, to go through some of these emotions and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, pornography is what LDS church members view as a pornography. You know, it's not really an addiction in that sense. Like, it's just because of the religious context that it's viewed in such a heinous way. And so then the comments to the episode, though, were really fascinating. Like, Jeff, you pointed out a couple of these that were particularly meaningful.
Yeah, let me see. And I agree with you. Yeah, like because we were talking about this before we started recording. Yeah, we weren't quite sure the best way to deal with it, because we don't want to legitimize stuff or like Al said, take away from the importance of actually, you know, abiding by these things. We don't want to treat it casually, as if stuff is just permissible because of whatever. But yeah, some of the comments were interesting. There was one woman who said she stopped listening because this is one of the ones that got a lot of comments, and it was very early on in the episode, or one of the first comments up there by a woman named, for all we know, Cynthia, talking about there, because the episode, like you said, it was dealt with it in kind of in a secular way, saying that like acceptance and acceptance or pumping up your sex life would be a way to combat pornography addiction from a man or what have you. And there was one woman who very much disagreed with that and said that she felt so much guilt. But the main tenor I saw, though, from a lot of I love that some of these women were very candid talking about their husband's problems with pornography. And the main attitude they had to take with it, they felt, was that it was a problem that you had to face as a couple, that it's very easy to crucify ourselves because of our problems and to feel maligned and to feel, you know, like we have to be outcasts because of things like that. And this is, of course, once again, not to legitimize or downplay the importance of keeping the commandments, but you have to combat these things head on, that through open discussion and open dialogue, things can get better. There was one woman, I don't remember where the exact
the one where she
was,
talks
I'm
about
sorry to say.
Kind of her openness.
Sort of, not her openness to that by any means, but the fact that she was aware, she loved her husband, she's aware of the problem he has, that it's a struggle, that it's something he's been working on, you know, for years, presumably, and that he tries to be open with her, that if there's an incident, if something happens, they talk about it. They talk about what led up to it, how it happened, what they can do to combat that in the future. And she says it helps her husband not to, like, not feel guilty, like he's sinning, but to feel that he has somewhere to go, that he has someone to lean on, and that this is a process in which he is supported, because it's very easy for us to just like want to castigate people for doing
balance. I think because you know the we know that the doctrine is, you know, avoid it like the plague, stay away from it. Elder Holland gave a great talk a while ago on, you know, where, yeah. where he referenced meeting those three women in the airport, and they, all of their marriages had been broken up because of pornography addictions and that kind of thing. And then there's this flip side of, like, you know, if you removed the religious lens, then it's a completely different scenario, right? And so as people, like, it's such an interesting,
absolutely.
I'd be curious, you know, what our listeners, kind of like what your take is on it. Click over on onto the MormonStories.org and read through some of the comments, maybe even give a listen to it if it's an interesting topic to you. But I'm really curious as to where, I don't know where the line is or what the right balance is, because with openness, comes healing, right? Like if you're ashamed of yourself,
exactly.
and you can't believe that you would ever do something like this, and you know that it hurts your wife, and you know that it hurts your family, and so then you bottle it up and you keep it from everyone. Then you become like this dark hidden kind of monster that has these secrets that no one can know about, and you lead this double life, right? Whereas if you're more open with it, and mm-hmm. you know that you your relationship is one in which I don't know, like refuge can be found, and that you're not necessarily going to be judged, but you're both walking the path together back to like a solid resistance of this or a solid marriage. Maybe that's better. Or do you, like, because I don't know the sentiment among women right now per se. I mean, I feel like a lot of it is if I'm married to a guy and he's got a pornography problem, I'm out of here. That's infidelity. I'm gone. You know, like, I'm not going to stick around for this. But I don't know what the right balance is there. And I don't know, maybe it's a good thing I'm not married, because I have no clue what that expectation is, right? Or like,
yeah,
what
how
are
you
supposed
well,
to be doing so far as a marriage relationship goes.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's obviously it depends on the situation itself. You know, we can't say, in some cases it could mean a dissolution
yeah.
of a relationship,
yeah.
and
See,
justly so.
There's,
And in some cases not. And of course, so that's an individual thing. But I think the one thing, there's actually one, where was it?
Well,
there's one
a,
guy.
There's a social context that goes along with it, right? That like kind of dictates where we go with this.
Yeah, it's true. There's a great comment on here by someone named Nur, who says that he is a leader in the LDS church, whatever that may be, and has overcome his pornography struggle by learning to acknowledge his God-given sexuality and refusing to let anyone in or out of the church suggest that he should feel any kind of shame for his interests, wants, and feelings. And I think there's something to be said for that. He's not saying just follow your, you know, explore, go to your heart's content. But I think I think personally, at least, this is just my opinion, it would do us some good if we shook off the stigma that, you know, sexual interests and desires and wanting those things is not bad. It's just acting on those things in an inappropriate way, in a way that's not conducive
yeah.
to God's plan for us. But I think the problem is, in our efforts to combat pornography, we sometimes cross that line and make it just seem like, especially like, you know, women should be these dainty little things that have no such interests. And we sit there in elders' quorum and they just, you know, smack us with a ruler and just say, no porn, no porn, no porn. But it's true. I mean, we need to acknowledge that we are sexual creatures. God created us this way for a reason, that we're supposed to have those desires. But we have to be willing to reflect and to really come to terms with the fact that those desires are fine. They are natural, but they need to be reserved for the proper time and place, like
it's
anything
so,
else.
So, like, I honestly don't know. Like, I don't well, masturbation is a great example, right? Like, I have a non-member roommate. And we have pretty frank discussions around like the do's and don'ts of Mormonism and uh-huh. why I'm quirky the way I am. And, you know, he asked me why on a lot of stuff, you know, like rated R movies. He's like, I don't get that. You know, like that'll never make sense to me why, you know, one rated R movie is bad, but the PG-13 is just, you know. And so we have these kind of discussions and masturbation has come up, and I don't understand the spirit of the law well enough to say, like, I don't know where the hinge lies, I guess, on that issue necessarily. Because for me, the way that I've always grown up with it is absolute self-control makes for a good person, right? So, like, if
sure.
if I have something that has rulership over me, or like something that dictates how I act or forces me to act a certain way, then that's not good. And so that's the tagline that I've led with my entire life that lets me kind of be good in tough circumstances, right? Like, I have absolute self-control. Like, this is what I'm doing. But it, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. And I think that's why I'm hesitant to bring this up on the show is, again,
I know, yeah, we're kind of going.
We don't want to make, yeah. I don't know if we are, like, do you be okay with it and just try really hard? Or is it a heinous thing that you throw earth and ashes at and curse them from the city afar? Like, I don't know what the right balance is with this.
Yeah. And then we get to the whole other debate that I was thinking about this last week, about how do we reconcile when we have constant struggles? We say it's porn, say it's anything, right? And we have constant struggles, things we work on all the time. And you know how it is. You work on something, you're never going to do this again. I'm never going to do this again. But then you fall down again at some point.
Yep.
Which happens. But that's exactly what we're saying. Do we take the attitude of, this happens, and you press on?
You know, we actually, need to feel... There was a reference made in Elder's Quorum a while ago. Hold on. Are we way over on time? Yeah, we're
not way over. We need to move on in a few.
A reference made in Elder's Quorum one time about how once you... If you sin, repent, and then sin again... All those past sins come back, and it was as though you'd never sinned, blah, blah, blah. And I believe the context of that is a little bit different, wherein if you repent and you repent completely, that sin is forgiven completely. And then if you stumble and fall again, I mean, the Lord is mindful that you've been here before, but what you've repented of doesn't magically become unrepented, right? Like, it doesn't magically go away, all that work that you did. This is my understanding of the gospel, right? Like, it's still taken into account, and the Lord works with you on a case by case basis, and that's how, like, I have to believe that, right? Like, I have to believe that the Lord gives some, like, that every time that you repent and then stumble, you're making progress, you're getting better. But I don't know.
I think the most dangerous thing we can do exactly is that Satan wants us, when we sin, in whatever way it is, to beat ourselves up. And he wants us to feel isolated and feel like we have no one to turn to. And so, the most important thing is to get up and press on.
That's right.
It's not to say that we can, that we have every right to just, like, screw up, repent of it, screw up again. You know, we're not to knock anybody, but, this isn't confession. You know, we don't just go and take care of it and that's that. But repentance is a process. Sin is an event, but repentance is an ongoing process.
That's right.
Always. And we have to be mindful of that and supportive of one another in doing that. And like we said, like you said, we can't, all the parameters, it totally varies depending on the situation, but we do need to work with understanding to help one another, to get to that point, because it's not easy. And I can't imagine, I certainly hope I'm never in any of these extremely difficult situations that marriages face in that regard, but it happens.
Yep.
And we need to help one another. So, well, I guess we can move on from that, though.
And I feel like we need to reward anybody that's listened through this far into the podcast. I got a great story for you.
Oh, here we go.
So Sunday, Harry Reid comes to church, right? So I'm up in New York. Harry Reid shows up to church. He's got his Secret Service detail, like the whole bit, right? They hit the building and they go. It was kind of cool, except I didn't recognize the man at all.
You are from the opposition now.
So we're sitting in there, and it was my first week as the sacrament meeting coordinator. And so I'm going around, like, I've prepared the sacrament, and I'm going around inviting people to come and bless and pass the sacrament. And I may or may not have invited his Secret Service detail one by one to come and participate in administering the sacrament. Because I didn't realize that Harry Reid and his Secret Service detail were there. So, like, afterwards, we're walking down the street with some friends, and they're like, did you see he was here? Oh, and all those secret... I was like, wait, how do you tell? They're like, well, they had the little earpiece going on. I was like, oh, yeah, I talked to those guys. And they very politely declined. They said, no, thank you. But Harry Reid, if you get some of those boys... Back in our ward, man, we sure need the priesthood up here.
I wonder if they're LDS.
I doubt it.
You never know. Maybe. That's a whole discussion we should have another time. Like, if we talk about if a Mormon gets in the White House, what does that mean for his church activity or her church activity too? Sorry. Yeah. Like, I mean, what could, you know, can you imagine if, say, Mitt Romney gets elected president? Is he going to be able to go to church every Sunday?
He holds a calling. He's like, well.
The calling would be the best. You are with the nursery, President Romney.
I'm teaching the CTRs right now.
Yeah. So,
anyway, a few more mentions.
I guess, sure.
No one answered Jeff's tithing question. He was very bitter.
Not that I was bitter.
Yeah,
you were. It's just a little bit.
Beards are making a comeback. Which temple was it in Arizona? Phoenix?
The Phoenix Temple is underway.
Hiya.
Oh, the beard thing is great, though. We found there's the Atlantic has a whole thing about beards and Mormons, and then there's also a blog called Bring Back the Beard, it's bringbackthebeard.blogspot.com, and it is devoted to bringing beards back to the church. And I have to say I support this, because it is a special interest. I am part of that group.
It is a special interest. All right, well, another great show. Wrapping up right around the 29-minute mark, trying to hit that half an hour.
Yep, that's exactly what happened. So anyways, everybody, thanks, buddy. Good discussion. I like it when we are able to talk about serious stuff sometimes.
Every now and then. All right, man. Well, hopefully this week is great for you.
I hope this week is great, too.
Let me know if you're coming up. We'll go see the Book of Mormon musical. It'll be tremendous.
No, we need to. Yeah, I like that we're planning our agenda now. No, just let me know. No, let me know how your schedule is looking and when a good weekend
right.
is for me to
Have
come up here.
Have a great
there,
summer.
Okay?
Love you, buddy.
Okay, like take care. ROFL.
All right, see you, man.
All right, bye, Al, and bye, everybody. Once again, find us in the usual places. This Week in Mormons on Facebook, at The Real Twim on Twitter. ThisWeekInMormons.com. Of course, contact us at contact@thisweekinmormons.com. And VU, find us there at VU/Twim, I think it is. So we can answer your videos. Because we've been getting just weird generic like things from people. It's weird. Ask us something legitimate, is all we're saying. did I cover all the social media bases?
I felt it.
Okay. So anyways, thanks, Al, and everybody have a great week. Thank you very much for listening to This Week in Mormons. We hope you know how much we appreciate it. And tell your friends, be our little Twim army. Have a great week, and we will talk to you later on. See you later.
Oftentimes, we find ourselves in the middle of summer, wondering, hoping, wishing. We think to ourselves, am I too far away? How far have I come? What more do I have to do to get back to fall? And then, at the end of the summer, we always hear that wicked little siren's call. Come to me, she says, you dirty little tramp. I'll make you happy. My voice is damp. It's moist. It'll draw you in. And like regret, wrapped in sin. You mustn't come, she says. You mustn't come here. This place is wrong. There's a light that beckons us. We must recover. carry on. For that's where hope lies. In the beyond. Beauty. Love.